Hey, thanks for tuning into the Ordinary Youth Ministry Podcast, where we cultivate conversations that hopefully impart a joyful and enduring faith to your teenagers. Your host,
Andrew, to sound so unsure about that.
You know, I don't have the script in front of me, so I'm doing it from memory. Anyways, our hosts, as always, are me, Andrew Unger, Alan Vosberg, and John Mark Smith. Today, we're talking about boy problems. I think is what we're calling it. Is that what we're going to title the episode? Boy problems.
This is going to be like, oh, like middle school girls can't get the boys to ask them out. That's what we're talking.
That's
about.
Right. What a perennial problem. No, we're talking about there's a tweet thread. I think it's on Twitter. I don't think it was on Threads. We'll put the
don't
link.
Don't you mean X?
Yeah.
No, I do not. It's Twitter. I will forever call it Twitter. I am not calling it x.com because I'm not a marketer in the 1990s. That's when X was cool. The Extreme Games. Come on.
The letter X is no longer cool.
The letter X has not been cool for a long time.
Which letter is cool now?
Oh, that's a good question. What's a cool letter?
Q.
Ooh, probably.
I'm partial to J. High score in Scrabble, right?
It's like 8 points.
Anyways, the gist of the thread was this. In the wake of a lot of the manosphere, what do you call the sort of Andrew Tate and crew influencers?
I don't call them anything. Manosphere?
Am I using that word correctly?
Yes.
In light of the fact that these figures are increasingly popular and yet they exhibit a kind of morality that many of us would find troublesome, there's a lot of people who write about, like, why are all the young men running to Andrew Tate and people like him are sort of exhibiting almost a caricature of the kind of patriarchy that others would critique. Why are people running to that? And so what this Xer, pointed out is, the way I'd summarize it is, you can't just shame young men for going to these bad influences until you understand what sort of situations are existing that drive them to it. So it's a question about, okay, what is it that young men find appealing about that? And so he said there's lots of problems, and some of the problems he named were lack of purpose, lack of meaning, a lack of, I thought it was interesting that he mentioned a lack of like physical touch. Mm-hmm. Like that among young men, there isn't room for physical touch. All that kind of stuff. And that's what's driving them. And until we address that issue underneath, the purposelessness, the meaninglessness, the way in which he would say our society harms boys, they will keep going to the people that offer them purpose and meaning and that kind of stuff. So we thought we would have a little conversation about boy problems and talk about what's up with boys. Come on, guys. Let's talk. What's up with boys?
What is up with boys?
What are your responses to the thread? How do you think we should minister in light of this? Do you think he's right? The floor.
Do you know any boys who engage in the manosphere? Personally?
I hear occasionally... I will hear people talk about, like, the Joe Rogan podcast. I know people who are, like, manosphere adjacent.
Okay.
So people who listen to those kinds of podcasts, people who are drawn
boys in your youth group, or just young men in your church.
I think young men that I've interacted with, I hear people occasionally talk about that kind of stuff. So I don't know someone who's like full in Andrew Tate. But I feel like I see echoes of it. Like, I don't see anybody full in like that. But I think I detect among boys, and even when I'm subbing at the high school, just sort of observing patterns, there is a little bit of that. Like, you'll see little, like, glimmers of that, like, alpha male mindset. Or that, like, pro-alpha male mindset, or whatever you want to call it. So I see a little bit of it.
I don't think I have students that are, like, deeply saturated in it, but I do live in Tennessee and I do see some of the correlated values, especially around, you know, males' inability to be emotionally open with each other. Is a very common thing I see among students in our area. And, you know, I want to give them credit. They are much better at it one-on-one. But there's something about the community of men that we have, at least in the cultures I think our students move in here, created context where it's like once there's more than one person around, like all these other extra defenses and like machoism type things go on. So like I'll have students, male students sometimes who will get to the point where they're genuinely frustrating each other and getting upset with each other. But from an outside perspective, what is watching is like they don't know how to own the feelings of what's happening. And so they lash out at each other, but they don't know how to say, even with help, that hurt. And I perceive that as being because there is a culture they are imbibing without even knowing it, that discourages owning vulnerability.
And I, so what's interesting to me thinking about where I observe this is actually, so sometimes I watch trashy reality television shows because that's how I disassociate with my time. And I was watching one that was based in the UK, and it was, you know, the contestants, the people on the show were men who were sort of stereotypically attractive. Like,
are you watching Love Island? Tell us now.
So when I was watching Love Island UK, there was a moment in which, not a moment, there's constantly among these sort of, again, stereotypically like jock types, right? Like they're lifting all the time. They frequently tell each other they love each other. Like they all do. The time. They're regularly, they're regularly giving each other kisses. Like non-romantic, they are kissing each other. And it's fascinating to me because both in the culture I grew up with and even thinking now, I cannot imagine that happening stateside. I thought about that when I thought about the guy talking about physical touch, that there is a real lack of physical touch between friends, even.
Yeah.
And I do think that is a thing that people are starved for. And I think young men are especially encouraged not to like be in contact with each other.
Right.
Like that is a discouraged thing.
Yeah. Well, and I want to address the, what I would call one elephant in the room in this conversation, which is, you know, the challenge when talking about men is that we do live in a culture where men have historically and even continue to have in many places preferential treatment and opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting dynamic is how even with that, it has not been good for men. And that's one thing we could discuss.
Patriarchy hurts everybody.
Right. So patriarchy hurts everybody. But the other thing I think is that we live in a more and more, you know, this is not news to any of us, but just more and more bifurcated, polarized community. And so there is, I think, some truth, not that the intention of good, well-meaning people to elevate women is to denigrate men, but in a culture where we've lost the ability to hold things together, I do think there is some truth that sometimes men do get told, well, you just don't matter and women do matter, right? Like there's a lot of unnuanced work being done. And so there is a real reaction to that. And now I want to own that I believe people are overreacting to the bad examples and throwing the baby out with the bathwater on that issue.
Yeah.
But it is true that there's in this mix of like, we are a polarized culture and the ability to say, hey, women have been mistreated for centuries and need to be given equal status and value, and we need to do all that work. And we, at the same time, we need to say, and we need to assess men and what are we teaching men and do a better job of that. Those two things have to be able to live together. And that is, I think, culturally hard at this point in America to be able to be pro women and say, and we got to do better with men too.
And I think some of the challenge is that many of us, our lives, or at least our mental lives, are lived online or on TV or in places where there's a where there's a conversation happening with lots of disembodied, contextless people talking about disembodied, contextless issues. Like, John Mark, I think it's helpful, like, you're in Nashville right now. Like, it can be, again, holding things in tension. There can be true systemic problems that need to be addressed on a systemic level. But the question as ministers of the gospel and as youth ministers who care about particular teenagers is, what are the messages that our particular teenagers are hearing? And people who have wide influence are going to have wide influence, and they, you know, we got to address that and cultural trends. I just think a lot of times some of the trouble that comes from any like culture war-y question, like any question that's sort of dealing with issues in air quotes, the culture, often are referring to like the placeless place of the internet and are not addressing like people and their real neighbors and their real school systems and their real, like, real local policies, real local issues. Again, not that like the messages we see on TV don't affect us, and not that the things we see online don't affect us. Those things are real. But one person can say, I feel like this is the message that goes out all the time to young men, when in reality, it's because you're online, like you're not actually engaging with the majority of the population. I remember once seeing, this is like a decade ago, that Twitter, only like 5% of Americans were on Twitter. And that was probably close to its like zenith of active use. And you think how much, I mean, I spent a lot of time on Twitter and would think I am seeing the conversation that's happening. Whereas 95% of Americans, like, not to mention most of Twitter wasn't having the conversation that I was having. And like most Americans weren't seeing it. So almost everybody had no idea what that conversation was, but I was under the impression that this was the thing. Which, I mean, to your point, Ellen, or your initial question of who do I know that's actually influenced by the manosphere? It's a worthwhile question. There can be these upticks in male suicidal ideation or anything like that, but those trends are one thing, but what's actually happening in our backyard?
Yeah.
Ellen, you're...
Well, I just, like, I spend a lot of time... Thank you.
You have to have opinions about this.
I feel like what I spend most of my time wrestling with in these types of, like, when this topic comes up, is, like, what's being described as, like, a problem for men and boys sounds to me like the problem our whole society is having, and to just, like... like, not that I'm saying that there can't be, like, perhaps particular ways it might be manifesting among men and boys, but, like isolation from one another is not, like, a uniquely male problem in our society. Like, that's something that we're all experiencing. So it just feels, so often these things that, like, oh, this is the crisis of masculinity, yada, yada, yada. Like, I'm just like, well, like, you're saying that these problems are about men, but they just look like generic people problems to me. And we like to talk about men and focus on men. So you've, like, made them about men. But, I think you're right.
There is no male problem that is not a human problem, because men are humans. So,
right.
Absolutely. These are human problems. And this is where, you know, like, I've always just said, like, it's not men need respect and women need, you know, like, whatever. BS. Everyone wants to be respected. Everyone wants to be loved. Like, these are human. Everyone wants purpose. These are not gendered identity issues. And I agree with that. At the same time, we do live in a culture that teaches different values to men and women. Right. So I was actually just listening to an interview with Jane Fonda, of all people, talking about, and she brought that up, of like how women, it is okay to, you know, say, hey, I need help. Like, hey, I have, like, I could use some support. Like, there's just a more culturally acceptable thing. Now, there's also hard things about being a woman. that she also talked about, but just that the cultural value on what does female friendship look like is different than the cultural values around male friendship. So when we talk, when I talk, at least, I can't speak for other people, but when I talk about the challenges facing men and boys today, I'm not talking about some inherent thing that is like uniquely male because of some unique thing that makes men need something different than women necessarily. What I'm talking about is we live in a real place, and this real place has taught men different ways and different values than women. And so there are certain things that have been taught to men that are really particularly unhelpful to them. Just like there's certain things that have been taught to women that are unhelpful to them. And in both places, we need to say, what's the corrective here? And men and women are not typically taught the same thing culturally about friendships, about who they are. You know, 99% of who a man and a woman is over, like, I think ought to overlap because we're human together. But culturally, that's not the experience of real people. And so men and women are being taught different things about what it means to be a human, what it means to be a male or female, what it means to have friendships, how to do that appropriately, how to get value in life, what you're capable of doing. And so that's where I think the issue is coming in, is not in a so much a inherent, you know, platonic ideal of what a man ought to be way, but in a lived reality of, if young boys are taught to shut down their emotions, if young were in a way that, you know, stereotypically girls wouldn't be, then that's minimizing something that is a good human quality to have emotions. Or if boys are taught, another example would be, I think we just teach boys and girls different things about the role of physicality in working out their issues. Which of course raises biological questions about hormones and all that. I'm not an expert, so I really have nothing to speak into that. But there's just these different things that we are taught about how to express ourselves. And I see that just in talking with families in our church of what they're telling their kids about what is and isn't appropriate for them to do. So I that's where I think the crisis comes from, is boys being taught bad things. And it's not that they need something just so inherently different than girls. But it's that they're being taught specific things, and some of those things are specifically harmful.
I also think, I remember seeing a really insightful, like, Atlantic article a number of years ago from Michael Ian Black, who's like a comedian who I only know of that he was always one of those talking heads on the VH1 I Love the 80s show. that's how I'm sure he's done other things, but he, I think he even wrote a book about the crisis, like a crisis of masculinity. This is before it was even like the manosphere popular. Existed, before it was cool to do so. But one of the things he said is sort of in the 60s and 70s, in that whatever wave of feminism that wave is, part of what happened is there became an internal conversation among women about what it means to be a woman and the different ways that you could be. Like the different ways that femininity could express itself. And so there were, like, it was no longer you had to be a housewife. Like suddenly it was more than that. And it was like, okay, we're shifting our identity, but we're having an internal conversation. And we've got lots of different models and pictures of what it can look like to be a healthy woman. We've got these pictures to us. And he said men never had that conversation. Like that conversation culturally didn't happen, in which men got to sit down and say, okay, we've learned some things. We don't want to be like a 1950s Leave It to Beaver kind of man. But we never had a conversation culturally about, like, okay, so then what are the other ways? What are other healthy images of what it looks like to be male? And I think, again, like John Mark said, I think there's lots of overlap. And I think, obviously, in the church, we ask women to frequently look at male biblical figures and learn from them. And I think men can learn from female figures and learn from what it means to be strong, courageous, you know, all the kinds of virtues we hope men have. But there is something about seeing representation matters. And I think we don't have as many positive examples, or at least I can't think of right now cultural men that I look to and say, this is a good example of healthy masculinity. Why can't I think of his name? Keanu Reeves.
What do you mean culturally? Like you want famous people?
I don't know if it's famous people or if it's like just different kinds of images of the kind of healthy masculinity that we would want. I was actually even a little, I really liked Zachary Wagner's Non-Toxic Masculinity book, but I expected it to offer, just from the title, I expected it to offer more of a positive view, a vocation of yes. And what it was a very good critique of what our generation had been handed in the church, especially out of purity culture, but it didn't include the vocation of yes. Like it was, here's the unhealthy things. Here's the toxic stuff that we want to shed, but you can't build your life on a vocation of yes. And I think that's maybe what Anthony Bradley, I think is the guy's name. I think part of what he's getting at is frequently the conversation culturally is about avoiding toxic masculinity. Excellent. Let's root out unhealthy habits. Let's root out those unhealthy patterns. Let's shed the things that we don't want to have. There's not as much conversation about a positive vocation. And so into that vacuum is where the manosphere steps in. It says, hey, we've got a positive vocation for you.
I do feel like though, are we all millennials? John, right, you're on the cusp, aren't you?
I'm a millennial. Oh my god!
Okay, millennials. As we've become parents,
yeah,
I do feel like I've seen a growing conversation about how millennial men, as a broad category, are much better fathers than their fathers were, like far more attentive, far more present to their children, far more like moving in the direction of like equal partnership with their spouses. And so I sort of wonder, like we're very worried about the next generation and what they're being taught, but like, and this is anecdotal, but like what I'm actually looking at current parents teaching the next generation seems like very positive. displays of masculinity. the grandfathers in my family have obvious and serious issues. They were not awesome dads. But in general, their sons demonstrate an awareness of that and are doing a lot of things to correct that. I feel like I've seen that kind of talk online. Like I'm not just talking about my own family. And then even when I think about the men that I go to church with, I would consider almost all of them to be like very positive, like gentle, attentive fathers. I mean, I don't know exactly what they're all like at home in the privacy of their living rooms, but like, from like what I can see of their families, I'm almost like that's kind of why I ask, like, where do you even encounter it in your life? Because it's definitely online, it's real.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, I can't decide how it actually is showing up in my particular context because like, and maybe I'm just like privileged to not see it.
Yeah.
But like what I'm actually observing in the like men and fathers around me is like good. what I would want my son to be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and I mean maybe that's the question is, okay, hopefully we're in churches where that, you know, as youth pastors, we don't have control over the culture of our churches.
No.
We do have control over how we talk about these questions to our students. And we do have control over what we communicate to them as they interact. Because whether or not they're directly influenced by these kinds of voices, they are going to encounter them. Right. And so I think it's important for us to teach in such a way that they understand what it means to be a Christian man? Like, what does it look like to grow up into the likeness of Christ in the particularities of your existence as a man, as a male, right? And it seems to me like at the heart of that is not even necessarily like, okay, these are the specific like Boy Scout tendencies I need to try and recommend. It's actually not, that's not a knock against the Boy Scouts, but it's not like, that's not what I think we need to offer. I think we need to, as I think about the healthy men that I want my sons to grow up looking to, it's people who are very aware of who they are and what makes them who they are. Like there's a self-awareness, because there's no like one type of man, just like there's no one type of woman, right? So there's a self-awareness, and there's, with that self-awareness, their like full known self is brought to Christ to be transformed and used for the kingdom. Because it'll look different for every young man, but there's a sense in which being aware of yourself, having self-awareness, recognizing your needs, your unique gifts, talents, and then saying, okay, based on the particularities of who I am, what does it look like for this to be put under the lordship of Jesus? What does it look like for myself to be brought to Christ?
Sure.
And transformed.
I mean, I think it's the case that, and this is, I'd be true for men and women, is what we can do best is put people into relationship with adults who we see as doing a good job of following Christ faithfully.
Yeah.
And give them that example. So, you know, in that way, it kind of just comes back to at least what I think is at the core of youth ministry is relationships and mentoring. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be helpful for them to see male and female leaders that are strong, that love Jesus and represent a diversity of different ways of being men and women and see that diversity. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, I think your other point was, I do agree with, is like, and where we're able to help them just reflect critically on the messages that they do receive.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means we need to have a boys and girls talk every year to address that.
Talk about boy problems. Job for me.
But like, to take some creativity to say, okay, how do we make space for that kind of intentional, critical response to culture without being heavy-handed or making a huge deal about things that may or may not be a huge deal in their life. So, but the mentoring and relationship seems like the key to me. So if I was trying to impart a joyful faith to students, I'd say, hey, how do I get my young men around men in our church?
Yeah.
More. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Ellen, any closing thought?
No, I'm pro men. Just want to put that on the record. This is a pro Boy Scout podcast.
This is a pro boys, pro Boy Scouts. We're here for men. Well, you know, listeners, we want to know where you've been encountering the manosphere. Does it influence your group? Do you think we're way off? Do you have big thoughts and feelings about this that you want to share? Because it's okay to share your feelings. You can reach out to us anytime at ordinaryyouthministry@gmail.com or find us on various and sundry social media at OrdinaryCast. We hope to continue this conversation, and we hope that today you've had a chance to learn a few things that'll help you impart a joyful and enduring faith to your teenagers. Until next time.